It is 10:30 a.m. on the West Coast, 1:30 p.m. on the East Coast. It's Value After Hours. I'm Tobias Carlisle. I'm joined, as always, by Jake Taylor and Bill Brewster. What's up, fellas?
Summer solstice on Earth. Here
it is, solstice.
So if you celebrate the sun gods, then this is today's your day.
Winter solstice in the Southern Hemisphere. We should be.
Don't discriminate.
Yeah, this is the holiest day of the year. Sacrifice the bull. Watch the sun go down.
Well, if you think about all of the chemical elements that create life, they came from inside of a sun. So it sort of makes some sense to, and all of the, we lost Bill. And all the energy basically that fights entropy for us on Earth comes from the sun. So if you were going to worship, the sun makes a little bit of sense.
True. Some wild moves over the weekend in Bitcoin. Bitcoin tried to fall off a cliff. It went through 18,000, got to a 17,000 handle. I got a screen cap at 17,663, which I think was quite close to the bottom. And it's had a pretty substantial rally since then. It's up like 25% or something since then.
Store value.
Like Tesla, you say 11%. On the day,
I think that's what Bill said before we came on.
Bill said, "Bill's here. He's dropped napping off momentarily.
He's taking a little nap. What's new with you, Toby?
Yeah, I spent last week looking at. Bear markets are completely unpredictable. I just was sort of interested to see some statistic. This is sort of what I'm going to be talking about a little bit today, but I learned this morning that this is the second worst start to a year ever. The worst start to a year was 1932. It was down about 40%, I think, by this point. And we're down about 22. And so I went and pulled up my old chart of bear markets and looked at the number of, there have been quite a few. This was the one that goes back to 1871. This is based on the Shiller data.
Shiller, I barely knew her. Sorry.
There have been quite a few. I forgot to count them up, but there have been, you know, I think there are like a dozen or something, maybe more than that, 20 since 1871. And the median drop is 38%. Median time period is 24 months, so 2 years. But the average is a bit longer than that. The average is skewed by two that are pre the 1932 crash that were like 10-year bear markets. Ooh. Plus 10-year plus bear markets.
Can't do that. That's impossible now, right?
Oh my God, I hope so.
They probably didn't have as long of bull markets either though then, did they?
I'm not sure. There certainly seemed to be. It was a lot more volatile.
Yeah.
Pre-Fed was more volatile. I think there were more, and I would have said shallower, but that's not true. That seems like they're. I mean, I don't know how you, like a 10-year bear market, there's probably a few cyclical bulls and bears inside that. This might be a secular, there might be secular bulls and bears.
So what are you saying? Go long as you can right now or stay out? I don't know.
So we're down 22%, median's 38%. But then more specific to value, I went and looked at the number of net nets that are available.
Ah, yes.
And there are a record number of net nets available since 1999.
Wow. That's more than 2008.
More than 2008, which I was surprised by. Yeah. This is just US only.
And so then the tide goes out and there's just all kinds of garbage sitting on the beach.
It really is garbage. I went and had a look. I shouldn't say that. There's a lot of pharma in there. There's a lot of biotech that has raised money and has traded well down below. So it's like, it looked like just eyeballing. It was like 80% pharma. But I had some people asking for all the pharma, you know, net nets and sub liquidation. So there are lots around.
If you had is there a good ETF for that that lives that's just
net nets.
All the net pharma or the below cash pharma?
I think the index is what you're looking for there. I think XBI. Okay. Let me just make sure that that's true. What is XBI? Yeah, that's the Spider S&P Biotech ETF. It's up 6% today. Oh, it's up 12.5% over the last 5 days. So I think that the index gets you pretty much there. The other thing I looked at was the number of acquirers multiple stocks around sub 3. So 3 times EV EBIT.
Yeah.
And that is, so I cut out the Chinese ADS. I cut out the Chinese ADRs out of the list. That was all domestic US as far as I could make it. Here's Billy.
Yeah, what's better? Like, oftentimes a net will show up as inventory heavy or AR maybe heavy, and or was it better to have it in the cash pile like a pharmaceutical? But who knows where it's kind of depends on whether you're getting liquidated or not, huh?
It does make sense. I've never looked at that specifically. Just I think if you have a whole lot of inventory and it suits, you're probably going to be in. That's probably not what you want. Fast fashion inventory is not what you want.
Oh, suits are maybe making a comeback though.
Maybe you can shift it. I don't know. Yeah, but it'll be like that. The cut will be 10 years old. It'll be like flared.
Real baggy.
Flares from the
suits. It's
the 70s, yeah. Ooh, big whoops. Shoulders. I guess that stuff comes back around though. You just stick it in inventory
just
for another 10 years.
Keep the moths out and you're fine.
Yeah, I've gone through the big suits and the skinny suits, and I guess we're going back to big suits now.
I'm not a fan.
Big suits?
Yeah.
But you got to, like, when we were in the skinny suits, like the stovepipe pants, not that long ago, like 5 years ago, whenever that was, the really loose-fitting suits look like...
Just look like a slob, right?
You look like you got, 2 yards of excess fabric on you. Yeah, so the other thing...
The hammer pants.
The hammer pants, yeah. Didn't he made them out of like curtains or something?
Yeah, those were great.
So the other thing that I looked at was the number of, so I was just before you came on, Bill, I was saying, I looked at the net nets, number of net nets. There's more net nets available now than there have been at any time since 1999. Vast majority.
Got to get bearish, nothing to buy.
Most of them are most of them are biotech, a lot of pharma. So they've raised money. So I think that in 2008, that was a pretty good hunting space. They did pretty well as a group. So that's, because they're still, their rate of discovery is still going to be the same. You're just getting a bet on sub cash, which is probably a pretty good bet as a basket.
Anything that stands out in looking at that list of the 3x EV to EBIT?
I don't know them well enough. I just haven't spent enough time digging around the net nets. The thing about net nets is though, it's like they don't really pay for much additional work in there, I don't think. too hard to predict. Yeah. But the sub threes was kind of interesting too. So I ran the sub three, so acquirers multiple sub 3 times, just as an antidote to like we're mid bet, we're bear market. Who knows? We could be down another 20%, 30%. Who knows? We could rally another 20%, 30% from here. No one's got any idea. And all of the news flow is really bearish. So I just thought I'd have a look and see what the value is beginning to look like, really deep value. So 3 times EVE, but there are almost a record number around. So we're at like, we're very close to like the last quarters of 2008, the last quarter of 2000.
Q1 2009.
Yeah. So it's like, I said, according to that count, I thought it was like the beginning of Q4 2008. Beginning so which means it's like maybe there's 2 quarters to go, who knows, but it's time to kind of like good time to go hunting. Probably a lot of volatility to come, potentially. It doesn't mean there's not a lot of volatility to come. Good time to go and hoover up some cheap value or spend some time over the next few quarters hoovering them up.
Stuff like Lehman and October 2008.
Well, we haven't really had a moment like that yet, have we?
No, maybe crypto. You could say you have.
Yeah, crypto had a few. I thought about that too.
I don't know.
I don't know. Is it big enough to count?
It is. If that was your whole net worth, I guess.
Yeah, but then you're an idiot.
So what's been smashed up in crypto? I don't really follow it that closely, but there were two big ones, right? Two big busts.
Yeah, what, Luna? And then what was this one last week? I can't remember the names either. I try not to dig through the...
I've only got enough room for a set number of tickers that I don't have. I don't have
space for tickers. I just know Twitter was very happy that crypto was melting down.
Yeah, some real schadenfreude happening there, huh?
Yeah, which I said I didn't really care very much and that I would keep my mind open, and that made people upset. So
we need you to be closed-minded, Bill.
The tough thing is...
And agree
Celsius,
with me.
Celsius, Solana. Thanks, fellas.
Okay. I think it's the only reason that I'd heard that I kind of understand is, I guess, that people were telling other people to have fun staying poor. I generally don't care when somebody that's trading, you know, sardines, a coin named after a bodily function is telling me to have fun staying poor. Like, okay, whatever.
Yeah.
You don't get it.
Not going to make it.
I'm not going to get rich if that's what it takes.
It's kind of amazing that, like, we're this far into a bear market, right? Or whatever it is, we're 6 months in or 18 months in, depending on where you're going to, like, put the actual starting point. And there's still stuff around, like, what's the Tesla ripoff? Nikola. Nikola's still out there with, like, a $3.5 billion market cap.
Yeah, there's a lot of that, I think, still.
ARK's still getting flows. Like, I wouldn't say that if we're moving through, like, Kubler-Ross stages of grief, I feel like we haven't moved much beyond the very first one, which is denial.
Yeah, maybe not even that.
It's when you get into acceptance that's when it's time for a rally. I don't know. I don't feel like we're there yet. None of that's scientific, of course.
I've accepted. So maybe my portfolio will bounce. Probably not. It's probably going down another 30 or 40%.
But it's the friends we made along the way.
Yeah, we'll see. Tell that to my kids when I'm hoeing myself out. I got to get in the gym so I look good when I have to do that. I'm not trying to give stuff away.
It's the internet, mate. There'll be somebody out there who's into that kind of thing.
You think?
Yeah, niche. Niche.
Sorry for what my Twitter feed's going to become. Soliciting pictures of my toes.
Your trap. A lot of brown sugar in that oatmeal.
That's right. Be whatever it needs to be.
GameStop still out there. Yeah.
That's a good point. Yeah.
It's funny how correlated all of that crypto is to the market. It's like, it's very techy, right? It's not correlated to gold, which you might, you know, as a store of value, inflation hedge, you might kind of think. No, gold hasn't done anything. Has gold woken up yet?
I don't think so.
I don't know.
Still around 1800-ish.
Gold's not aware that there's inflation going on yet.
Yeah, you think maybe, is there some percentage of people, let's say your worldview is that you don't trust fiat currencies and therefore you don't want to participate and you just got obliterated on Bitcoin. Do you go looking for something else and find gold to scratch that itch for you?
Peter Schiff hopes so, and he'll sell you the solution.
How much does it cost?
I don't know. I think I've never really looked into his solution.
Okay. Astrid Wild says we're up to a half dozen liquidations in crypto now. Celsius, Three Arrows Capital, Luna. Yeah.
One we can't say.
AMC Long Gold. We can't say one.
Oh, what Bill was referencing earlier.
Cummies.
Yeah.
Jesus.
Come on. This is a family show.
That was a real thing. Anymore. In case people forget, that was actually a thing. That's not something we made up.
Did they say that one on CNBC at any point?
I hope so.
We got to find a clip of that if they did.
That would be hilarious.
That one belongs in the... Whatever the
Andrew
financial
Ross Sorkin
Smithsonian
trying
is.
To cover that seriously would be a very funny clip.
His face is getting all red.
It's an NFT that I would buy.
Now you're talking.
Ray Dalio has a $10 billion short position on EU equities.
Yeah, that doesn't. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, I don't. You never know what those things are. Like, that could just be. Is that hedging something else out? I don't know.
That's, yeah. Is that nominal?
Well, they look at asset classes, right? So, yeah. I mean, you know, this is probably why there's value
uncorrelated asset classes.
Let's say that you're bullish on commodities, and let's say that you naturally skew bearish towards the economy and equities in general. The EU doesn't seem to be the place that you'd want to go running to. Seems like a reasonable place to short.
Also,
sure, EU long like emerging market commodity producers would make a, like, that trade would make sense to me.
Dylan Thompson points out it's $140 billion AUM, so not a huge position relative to the AUM. I'm amazed that they can get it on. Like, that's a big bet to get on.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. They're dealing with problems that I am not.
Shorting's not easy, even small amounts. You're really stuck in it at $10 billion. Wow. If that moves against you, you just got to wear it. You're Melvin Capital all the way through.
Yeah, I don't know. They probably have something else.
How's AMC doing these days? I don't want to dunk on those guys too much, but
there's a lot. Did Top Gun save them? I don't know.
That was a good movie.
Haven't they already transitioned to gold mine?
Yeah. No, they had that position in a gold miner. But
the thing that didn't make sense to me on that movie is, why do they have to fly the junkier F-18s?
Don't give it away. I haven't seen it yet. Don't give away the ending.
Yeah, no,
that's not going to ruin anything.
I'm joking.
No, I don't know, but I think
why can't we have the most badass ones? Like,
it has something to do with maneuverability, man.
Doesn't anyone own Lockheed Martin?
Plus, Tom Cruise needed it.
Okay,
you haven't seen it yet, Toby.
No, I saw the first one, so I figure I've got the idea of what happens in it.
No, you don't. No, you really don't. I took my kids.
It's not a remake
decision. Though my friend told me that the language was much better than it was. It was not as good as he made it sound, but
like there was some bad words, you mean?
Yeah, the frequency. I was told that there wasn't many, but there were more than I thought. And the 6-year-old picked them all up.
Listen, if you're getting
giggling like a schoolgirl every time the word shit comes out.
It's titillating.
Yes. I don't know how AMC is doing.
We should transition into some sort of semblance of a
show.
Of a podcast here.
Should we though?
What have we got?
You want some veggies?
Yeah. That's a good thing to chew on.
So this week, my friend Haron Bakta sent me this 1972 letter that Warren Buffett wrote to Chuck Huggins, who was the president of See's Candy. So this is shortly after acquisition. And it's funny because it really is like Buffett was this kid in a candy store. And he went and visited one of the candy stores, I think in Brandeis, like LA. And I find it was a little funny to read because he is like a kid in a candy store and he's like getting way down in the weeds of this, but I guess, you know, when you dole out $25 million or whatever to buy it, you get pretty excited. But I thought I would run through some of the highlights of it and then maybe some of the takeaways. So does that sound fun for you guys?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So the first quote out of it is people are going to be affected not only by how our candy tastes, but obviously by what they hear about it from others, as well as the retailing environment in which it appears. Which includes the class of the store, the packaging, and the surrounding merchandise. and the surroundings in which our candy is offered affect potential customers' mental and even gastronomical impression of our quality. So, you know, right away, this reminds me of Rory Sutherland's terrific book, Alchemy, which is looks at really this idea that there's an engineering answer for everything, but then there's also usually a human answer as well that has to do with our perceived reality. And, you know, he had this famous story, Sutherland did, about these engineers were looking to spend, you know, billions of dollars to straighten out this, you know, part of this track to shave 30 minutes off of a 4-hour commuter train ride. Well, instead, for like, you know, 1/1000th of the cost, they could have put in, you know, big screen TVs into every seat back and had models serving drinks. And the perceived, like, you wouldn't even want to get off the train at that point. Like, the fact that it's 4 hours doesn't bother you. So Buffett's recognizing that even the taste of the chocolate is impacted by the surroundings around it. And probably every, like, you know, Michelin rated restaurant understands that all. Like, that's why there's so much exactitude and, like, you know, sweeping the breadcrumbs up with the little brush. Like, there's just a lot of attention to detail, which makes everything taste better. So Buffett was complaining about how Stover's had in the display at this store was organized in an exclusive and attractive part of the store. And the C's was, like, just sitting on this counter with 25 other cheap offerings of like cheap candy and, like, this generic signage that the store had just, like, you know, written on the back of a napkin, basically. And I think he wasn't very happy about it. So he's saying that Buffett said they have to be offered in a way that establishes them as something that's very special, and they need to be insulated away from inferior products. And then he started talking about, you know, all this stuff requires small scale testing, which is kind of interesting. And that's like, there was a book that came out probably 5 or 6 years ago called Little Bets that uses this idea of lots of little iterations of trying things out to see what works and fail small, never bet the farm. So then he starts getting into why, you know, when they do take C's outside of the existing territory, Buffett suggested this, like, writing up this descriptive material for it, like this little storybook, like a booklet that might be called The Most Famous Kitchen in the World. And he talks about how Coors got a lot of mileage out of all of their beers coming from this one specific factory, right, in Colorado with the best water. And he said that there's a mystique attached to products with a geographical uniqueness. And he talks about this, you know, there's this little 80 acre vineyard in France that, you know, supposedly has the best grapes. But he said, I've always had the suspicion that about 99% of it is in the telling and about 1% is in the drinking. And then he said, it should be very hard to get, available only periodically, and then to the consumer, apparently only in limited quantities. So, I mean, what this is telling you is that, like, you know, Buffett understood the McRib before it was a thing. He got consumer psychology way back in, you know, 1972 when he was 42 years old, and he's been playing the game ever since. So I thought it was kind of an interesting little, like, I love to get his real time, you know, thoughts in a specific situation at, like, very early days, just to see, like, well, what the hell was that guy thinking about at that time? So that was Buffett's letter to Chuck Huggins.
That was fascinating. Do you visit C's stores at any, do you, to buy chocolate or just to do a channel check or whatever?
I have been to several. There's one in 2 miles from my house, but I typically won't go there to buy candy. Like, I only buy C's mostly at Berkshire Meeting, or actually I do try to, I have a fun tradition of, like, buying a box usually in the airport and getting stiffed, and taking it with me if I'm going to another shareholders meeting, especially with friends who I'm traveling with, and kind of making it a little bit of a festive event for us. But yeah,
that's a good idea. I'm always struck by a few things. One, there's one near our house. My wife likes one of the dark chocolate peanut brittle.
Oh god, so good.
Unfortunately, yeah. So I go and get her some of those every now and again, and the store is. It's funny for a candy store, like, it's huge for one thing. It's much, much bigger, I think, than it needs to be. Mm. It's completely white on the inside.
Yeah.
All of the chocolate is in basically cellophane bags or out on display in those little paper cups. Like, there's not much packaged up, but it's always really busy too. And it's extraordinarily expensive. So it's a good mix. It's not intuitive to me at all. That's the way that you do it.
Is it a pretty old store, do you think? I mean, because started down in LA, so I wouldn't be surprised if it was, like, one of the earlier.
It can't be that old. It's in a reasonably newish sort of, yeah, like, row of stores. But it's all, like, there's always, it's off Hawthorne. There's always a lot of traffic on Hawthorne. It's a very busy road here. But there's always lots of traffic in that parking lot as well. I'm kind of, at any time of the day, I always try and sneak down at some time where I don't think there's going to be anybody there. And it's always busy.
Like, sugar is addictive.
But there's other easier options for getting the sugar. I don't know. I'm aware of C's, but only by virtue of the fact that I you know, I'm like Buffett Berkshire C's, not the other way around. And then lots of people know about it otherwise, I guess.
Oh yeah. I remember getting it as a kid, like really young, maybe 3 or 4, and it would just be only during Christmas. There'd be like one box. You could have like a half of a piece at, you know, per night kind of thing. And so it felt very special and very exclusive and quite the treat.
I can see the margins as I'm walking around the store. Yeah. There are big margins on this stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know. Good business.
Never had an attachment. Ghirardelli was probably the closest thing that I like a chocolate store that I had an attachment to.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. My buddy Alex was out at a couple of the seas. He said that it looks like they need some reinvestment.
they really do. They're utilitarian. But I guess it works because it's busy. And the packaging's not, the packaging doesn't look expensive either.
They don't sell a ton more poundage wise than they did over the years. It's just the price has gone up.
Bloop, 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 bloop.
And guess what hasn't gone up that much? The machinery to create it.
Yeah, the prices are eye opening. Every time I'm in Omaha and we go to that little store in Omaha, it's just like mind boggling what they can charge. But they sell so much of it that, I mean, they figured something out. Good for them.
Yeah, well, Omaha's a little different. You can deal a lot to your cult members, but
it's true. I mean, it's the same deal. And yeah, I think that there's a little discount in Omaha, isn't there? Or maybe there's not.
I don't know. I'm usually paying it no matter what he's charging there.
Yeah.
Because I need to get something to bring home, show that I was thoughtful.
$25 million to buy it. And I think it's spun off now north of $1.5 billion over that time period. You just got to do that one time in life. Just find one of those.
Pretty good.
Do that one time and then reinvest those numbers just even in a SPY. And that's a very, very big number.
That's
spend
so fun,
the first Toby. 10 years reinvesting and then, you know, go bananas.
Mm. Yeah. I'm going to retire if that happens. I will not be working.
What's everybody think about energy here? Are we like, we're sort of, energy's had a pretty good run and everybody seems to be, you know, just as a total segue from chocolate to energy. I don't know. Two necessities. Yeah. But the nature of the metric that I favor that acquires multiple where you're looking at EBIT, you need to have some flows before it kind of shows up in the screens. And so the flows haven't really shown up much. There's a few things around that are cheapish.
So they're going to show up then, like you're going to see a big jump in EBIT and then therefore, okay, now it's showing up on the screen.
There are a handful of names around, but not many.
Well, I think that's, you know, you and I were talking earlier about that company, Blue Links, that does construction supply stuff. And God, to look at their EBIT over the last 5 years, and it just was like nothing really happening. And then it just absolutely explodes. But enterprise value, if you look over that exact time period, like doesn't really move much at all either. So EV to EBIT went from like 35 times 2 years ago to like 3 now. And it was all EBIT and no change in EV. So basically what that's telling me is that like Mr. Market does not believe that this kind of earnings is anywhere near sustainable. So I'd be curious to see if that similar kind of dynamic happens with the energy companies when EBIT does show up for you. Does EV even notice?
Oh, I don't think so. I bet EV would sell off.
That's been true in the steel names.
If I had to get a guess.
Like Blue, United States Steel X, it's like, I forget the exact number, but it's like 2 or 3 times EBIT. Like everybody's just assuming that that's a one-time blip.
But even if, what if it lasts longer than what everyone thinks? Is that how you win?
Well, that's what I wonder about energy. Like there's a war going on, which is one of the reasons that, and that's impacting one of the areas where we get our energy from. So that's one of the reasons why. And there's also some domestic policy reasons why energy is getting squeezed. But it doesn't seem to me like that's a problem that gets resolved anytime soon. And if anything, energy should just keep on getting more expensive, right? We seem to be, we're anti any carbon dioxide producing hydrocarbons.
Why were people willing to pay 3 times price to book for Chevron back in whatever 2011, 12? Like, why is it different this time?
Well, I just don't think, I don't know. I mean, I'm looking what Chevron's EV is higher than it's been in 22 years. Well, so who cares about the multiple?
Blue Link's stock ran from, it was like $4 to $80, I think, from like early 2020 to late 2021 or early 2022. It's a 20 bagger.
Yeah. Yep. I remember taking a look at that. I think I sent it to you guys.
Possible.
Did you buy it?
No, because why would I want to make money?
Send me your highest conviction ideas.
Yeah, I remember we talked about it because it had a bunch of leverage, but all the leverage was like actually to fund working capital. And
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, something like Blue Links, when you get, I mean, you're hanging around a $80 million market cap. You can, flows can move that thing.
Yeah. The other thing too is such a tough game if you're in something really cyclical like that and you're managing it and you have to decide, okay, well, my stock is super cheap. If the world looks like it did for the last year, do I hoover it up and then, you know, deplete the resources that I have available? If things go to pot though, then I'm like hamstringing myself. You get really like, that's a tough hand to play, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. Agreed.
How do you manage?
Yeah. I think the problem with that is, like those kind of names, I personally would always be looking to trade. And I think whenever I'm looking to trade something, I
should
tend to quick to pull the trigger out. Which, you know, you can make a lot of money doing that. You just got to know when to buy and sell.
That sounds hard.
Yeah. Well, I haven't figured it out. You know, Curate, obviously I should have sold, right? That should have been a trade. But, you know, at the time I thought that the business could stick, but obviously was wrong.
Well, it's also complicated by the fact, as we discussed before, you get some weird comps 19, 20, 21. So to normalize for all of that is hard. But then, you know, we've had a 2020 stock market crash, that monster rally through 2021, and now probably staring at like a mega bear. We're halfway into a mega bear.
Do you have a bear drop for us, Bill, on the soundboard?
No, I do not.
Oh, what you got on the soundboard?
Yeah.
Hang on. What would be the most appropriate mega bear? Yeah, this would be kind of scary.
Whoa, chills down my spine.
Yeah, right? I guess you could say.
Yeah, there we go.
that's mega bear-y.
I feel like we're probably going to be in the higher energy prices for a while, right? There's just no way of getting out of that.
Commodity complex seems tight.
The funny thing is,
what does that mean? Like supplies are tight, you mean?
Yeah, like I was talking to my buddy that's the gas trader, and he was just like, there's no inventory anywhere.
None of the... I mean, I don't know so much about energy. I haven't seen a lot of energy, but all of the mineral, like BHP and Rio and all those things, they've had pretty good years and they're all cheap, like on a multiple basis. I don't know what to... I think that's more of the same. Like people just don't trust them. We'll be 10 years time, we'll be talking about this saying, yeah, that when they were cheap, that was probably a good time to buy them.
Well, they were cheap a year ago when Cramer said you can't touch them. Now he's saying you got to buy them.
I hate to hear that if you're long.
Yeah, you don't like it.
When was negative oil? Was that last year or was that 2020?
No, that was 2020.
Yeah.
That was March 2020.
Was it March?
Yeah.
Jesus, time dilates.
Yeah, the world shut down and all the oil was on all the tankers. Tankers were charging a shit ton for storage because everything was filled up. Yeah.
Swimming pools and Cushing.
Yeah.
Didn't have to hold it for very long.
No, normally you'd think that solved itself pretty quickly.
Yeah, well, negative oil will do that.
my econometrician professor pointed out when I was in uni doing econometrics, that you really, the best price, the most predictive price for any commodity in a year is its current price. And the only time that doesn't apply is at the extremes where you're better off taking a mean reversion bet. So he's right. Again, oil is one of the things he tracked.
The Fed bailed out oil. Imagine that.
So is that saying then that if you're like, there's almost a like a gravity well at around like a normal price, but if you're anywhere away from it, then bet the other way?
Well, he said that his point was it's unpredictable. And so taking the current price as your forward price, as the price in a year, means you minimize the errors that you make. But the only times that doesn't apply is when, and he would look at, I don't know whether it was the fifth percentile or the second percentile, but if it was out in the
standard
extreme
deviation,
then he would take a mean reversion bet. And he was like and he used to track oil, gold, and I think maybe the Dow against each other, all three of them, and that would tell him where to direct his asset allocation.
Did it work?
Did pretty well. Yeah.
Interesting.
It's a futures trader.
Interesting indeed.
I had a guy who claimed to trade closed end funds, and every class he'd be telling us how he'd buy at the bottom and sell at the top. And I'd be like, I don't know if you'd be here if you were really telling the truth. But he claimed it. Bill Pugh.
He's clipping out 15% returns every time he does it.
That's right. 15%
discount.
Best investor of all time.
Was he
the guy no one ever knew of?
Trying to liquidate him? How did he?
No. He said that he would trade him. I don't really understand. I don't know. I kind of stopped listening after.
I actually think that's not
that
a bad way of
that
doing
I didn't
it.
Believe.
Because you're when they're at a big discount, probably the underlying is pretty beaten up too. And then if you wait until they get to, I don't know if they ever actually get to fair value, whatever they get to. But I guess sometimes they do get to a premium, punt out of them at a premium.
Yeah, he just, every chart that he showed, he basically bottom tipped and sold at the high. And
yeah,
I don't know. Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, I was too young to understand financial marketing at the time. I should have understood
the marketing.
Yeah.
You're marketed being marketed to by one of your professors?
By the professor, yeah, that's right.
Wow.
I mean, I assume so, or else the guy's a savant. But if he is, judging by the car that he drove, he's definitely retired now. So he did not spend money.
Do you guys want to have a swing at is this a bottom or a bear market bounce?
If I had to guess, I'd say a bear market bounce.
I think that's probably a reasonable assumption, as a base case, given that we certainly are not below a lot of valuation metrics, macro valuation metrics.
Like CAPE or something like that?
Sure. I mean, pick whichever one you like.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah, we're not really in that, what you would call like generational cheap level where for most data sets, you do have to spend some time below the mean as well. You can't just live above the mean all the time.
The only thing about CAPE is that it really only came out in 1996. And since 1996, it's been at a pretty big premium to the long run average.
Yeah.
1996 might be the last time it was at the long run average. It was like
last time it worked.
Yeah. Since then, it's been north of that. Yeah. I think it would have told you to buy, like you would have bought the bottom in 2000, maybe the bottom in 2009.
And you don't have to work again.
Got to average, right? Sort of.
Yeah.
So it didn't ever really go below it. So if you were sort of waiting for the below, then you might have missed it. Yeah.
But then like on the metrics that I looked at, the ones I was discussing earlier, like net nets, that are more net nets are available now than they have been at any other time since 1999. 3x EVE, but.
Yeah, I was trying to think about that. Like, is there any other reason why that population would be, blossoming more than it would in other times? I think maybe there's an argument to be made that like low rates might have something to do with that. Like,
for net nets or for EV, but
net nets.
Well, net nets, the fact that they are predominantly pharma tells me that they've had a pretty good capital raising period, and now they've sold down, and so that is how I got. that universe to show. That's how I imagine that it happened. I don't know if that's the case. That's kind of my guess.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was trying to back into, but you said it more eloquently.
But 3 by EV EBIT is another interesting one. So if I limited that universe to positive EBITDA, it went from like 905 names. This is in the Russell 3000. So it went from 905 names out of the Russell 3000 to 58 names out of the Russell 3000.
Hmm. Wait, how do you have three times? You have positive EBIT, obviously, if you're at three.
Well, you could have a negative.
How would you have negative EBITDA if you have positive?
You could have negative EV. No.
That's
sorry.
A da.
Either way,
right?
Can you unpack that for me again, Toby?
Sorry, I didn't mean to change the metric. The metric was the same. So three times EV EBIT. Sorry, I didn't mean to say EBITDA if I said that. Three times EV EBIT, unconstrained, 905 names out of 3,000, with the limiting that the EBIT has to be positive. It dropped to 58.
But how do you have a three if the EBIT's negative?
You could have losing less than three times.
So you're saying they're only. Well, how many did you say? 58.
58.
Okay. With positive EBIT and a multiple of three.
I got to say, I find those numbers a little bit unbelievable. I don't know how if that data's messy, but I that's what came out.
Yeah, I don't know.
I would say that a basket of biotech net nets would do pretty well out of here. Probably the index is all you need to do. XBI. There's so many of them. It's probably that you, as long as they're in the index, I don't know what the index, how the index works. If it's got some other stuff in there, like moving averages or anything.
Yeah. I should probably look through that and see what the metrics look like.
The other thing is it's hard for funds to buy those things. There's usually a market cap cutoff of 75 million. Can't buy below 75 million for ETFs.
Hmm.
Wait, who can't buy below?
ETFs.
Oh, okay.
So if you're looking at an index like XBI,
yeah,
and then
that's
all, I don't know if that's the
bigger dead fish in that.
I had asked this question on the Twitter machine before. I think that the answer that came back to me on the best way to play this was just by Thermo Fisher.
Oh yeah, does it sell to all those guys?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
And it's gotten nuked, I assume then.
Yeah, not really.
Oh.
It's a very high quality business, so I don't know that it gets nuked. 3.5% free cash flow yield out of the gate.
Okay. So treasury.
Yeah, but it is growing, so I guess I could understand why somebody convinces themselves to buy it. It's a very good company.
How do you feel about airline companies at the moment, Bill? Have you looked at that any times recently?
No, the only one that I've really looked at is Spirit, because I think that deal is interesting, but I haven't like really done the work on it. Yeah,
right.
Yeah,
because we're still well below capacity. We're like 20% below capacity, but they're flying many fewer planes and flying smaller planes. So when you fly, the planes are all full.
Yeah.
Well, I flew six times between going to Sacramento and Omaha and New York. Every single flight, they said, you know, check your bags at the door because this is a full flight.
Yeah, they're hitting me with demand destruction. I was looking at some tickets and I was like, well, I don't think I actually need to make that trip.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, it just kind of forces you to prioritize.
Yeah.
What do I really want to do here?
Do I want to feed my kids or do I want to
go to... Well, yeah. And the answer is I just kind of want to hang out with my kids.
I got a question, kind of two embedded questions in this. How do you guys expect the market to handle the next few rate hikes? So one thing, do we expect more rate hikes? And two, what happens when we see them?
I don't know, man. Those are hard questions.
Too hard. This is a podcast.
Those are hard questions. Yeah. I'd say in 5 years, I think rates are lower than they are today. I don't know where I think they are in That's a year.
Spicy. Is it low growth? Is that why?
Yeah. I mean, I don't really see anything that makes me understand why. I mean, the trend of rates going down is like very, very, very long. And I don't
that's,
know what
that's such a bullshit chart though. That one where they show going back to like medieval times or like ancient Egypt, where rates are like a lot of old
money. One king loaned money to another king at that rate. Well, there's our data pay for that 100-year set.
I'm just saying, I think you get a lot of older people that need to generate income by buying financial assets, and I don't think that that's going to change. And
but they'll be net sellers, won't they? They're not saving anymore.
Well, they're buying debt.
But they're at the consumption point. Like the boomers are at the consumption part of the cycle. Like that started a few years ago. That was part of Michael Green's thesis, is that you can see the effects of the sell-off from 2018 being the first year that the boomers became net sellers. And so that was the first
year. Of equities or of debt?
Equities.
Yeah, well, but they're going to buy debt, right? You want to fix your interest or your income. I would think. I mean, that's what I would want to do. If I could get any yield on debt, I would be buying debt hand over fist if I was older. Because then you're in a higher security portion of the capital stack and you can actually like bank on your income.
You've got some duration risk and you don't have much income. It's hard.
Yeah, but it's better than owning equities.
Well, I guess the argument for equities would be that the equities can potentially reinvest and grow. Although if you look at inflationary periods in the past, like that was, Buffett has talked about, you know, you got the world's greatest capital allocator running Berkshire Hathaway levered 1.7 to 1 versus gold, and gold keeps up, or he just keeps up with gold for 13 years.
Yeah. I mean, look, maybe, I don't know. It just seems to me, I can't paint some rosy picture for growth on the back end of all this.
So you're saying there's like a whole generational de-risking that's going to happen in financial markets, basically, with that?
But we're midway through it, surely. Like we're 2018, we're 4 or 5 years into.
Why was there a melt-up then in that whole time period?
Well, that was all just a liquidity explosion.
I think that Michael Green's thesis was that 2018 was the first year that they could take a distribution, and they waited until the very end of the year to take it, which is why the market tanked when they all decided to pull it out. So then they got smarter over the following years, and they did it at different, either staged it through the year or they just sold off at different times. But I don't know. I think they're net sellers overall. Yeah, why was there a melt-up? I have no idea.
This thesis changes every time we talk about it.
Well, it's my interpretation.
Or we don't understand.
To be fair.
Yeah, I think that's the real answer.
Yeah.
User error.
Yeah.
Yeah, why does it run up? Wow. No idea. It feels like it's expensive and selling off at the moment. But big, big bounce today. So the bounce is a bear market, you know, dead cat bounce or the bottom. I don't know. Too hard. Doesn't look like a bottom to me, but who knows?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, looks like rates are breaking out. Maybe they go higher. I have no idea.
Over
that says not.
If you didn't have the Fed with their finger on the weighing machine, then I'd say it's almost certainly higher. But just.
But you do.
But if you look at the experience of the BOJ and the ECB, both of which I think are probably just America a little bit further down the line, in both of those interest rates still anemic, and they got negative. So maybe that's right. Maybe we don't stop until we see negative rates.
Yeah, I don't know. Outside of wanting rates to go higher, I don't know why they will go higher. I guess
inflation.
I don't know that. I don't know. I don't know. I don't know why. Like you could have a period of negative real return. Like I don't know why capital deserves real return. I understand because it does. What?
Easy there, Ingles.
No, I'm just saying, like, I just don't know. I mean, it's wherever things can get placed. And
it's not so much that it deserves it. It's that it's for a lot of people that don't like to put their money into things where they're going to lose purchasing power over the period of time they hold it. And so it's not like they deserve it. They just don't. Yeah. They just don't invest until they get a reasonable yield for the risk and the duration that they're taking.
They don't have to buy it.
And that's what creates higher interest rates.
Yeah, unless you've got, they just sit there and watch inflation destroy their purchasing power in the meantime.
But you're going to get destroyed in bonds.
Yeah, but you can earn a little bit more, like, you know, buying treasuries and not making 3.5% or 3% or whatever. That's not the end of the world.
Well,
inflation's at 8.5%.
Yes. Does it matter if
I don't? I think that the inflation thing is a little overblown. Probably, I really do. But so I mean, let's see.
There was a chart yesterday of the 70s inflation versus rates, and you can see them kind of creeping up the rates to kind of capture the inflation, and just the inflation runs away, and they do eventually put rates up to the point where it breaks the inflation. But
it took a decade.
It did. I think the whole thing was like 17 years or something like that. Well, it was something like that. It's like 66 to 82, something like that.
So rates were just always a little behind inflation, trying to chase it upward.
And then rates get scary high. Rates get gnarly. I was looking at that thinking, I wonder where a lot of these names trade if we get real kind of double-digit rates.
Oh, yeah.
Well, everything is fucked.
What's the
SaaS? I mean, you own cash. You have to own cash in that scenario. We're going into depression. 100%.
Well, 66 to, I mean, that was a bad time to be. 66 to 82 was a rough time in the market.
I mean, maybe somebody's like, no, you don't. You can own oil. Fine. Noted.
Yeah.
But other than that, like, if you want to play the commodity game, I'd say more power to you. But I don't think. I mean, if rates are going to double digits, the economy's done.
I mean, the risk is that it already is. We just haven't recognized it.
Nobody puts up rates because they want to.
Like, the Fed is fully aware of what happens when they stick up the rates. That's why they don't want to do it. That's why they keep on saying, QT's almost done.
Hasn't even started yet. What are they talking about?
We're going to be doing QE and QT at the same time. Quantitative easing and quantitative tightening.
This is like driving around with your foot on the brake the whole time too.
Get the verbal QT and the real QE going behind the scenes. FOMC's out there. Loan ship all
QT
by themselves.
In the streets, QE in the sheets.
The other way around, right?
Oh, okay. Damn it.
I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I think a recession is pretty much inevitable. How bad, we'll see. But you can't stop housing and not have a recession.
Jeremy Burns has given us a $4.99 tip with a question. What do you see happening to housing? You like multifamily?
Yeah, Bill, take this one.
And just, it's stopped.
Well, multifamily stopped.
What do you mean? Like,
no, I think multifamily. I mean, I think your cap rates are going to be kind of screwed, but your rent growth might offset that a little bit if you believe that there's actually a housing shortage. Because
you're saying we're not finishing houses right now?
Yeah. And I think you slow down starts. And I think that people that are in housing are not going to sell their house. I think mobility goes very, very low. And then you get the multiplier effect of all the construction jobs that don't happen. And that goes throughout the economy. And that's a bunch of people that spend money. And then you've got yourself a problem.
There are a lot of layoffs at the moment in tech.
Yeah, fuck those. I mean, not really. I don't mean that. But like those, a lot of those people can deal with it. A lot of them get paid like 3 months and they can find a job while they're searching and all that stuff. I'm not concerned about those people. I'm concerned about the laborer that's trying to put food on his table tomorrow, not the guy that, you know, makes 200 grand a year that is paid to search for a job.
Well, I think they spend it all.
Yeah, well, that's on them.
Because if you live in San Francisco, like,
that's, yeah, minimum wage.
Yeah, I guess.
But I mean, in terms of like, I'm worried about them in each individual personally, but I also mean like more broadly what that does to the economy. If you take out a whole lot of hype, like the minimum wage for Facebook, I think is like 350 grand a year. Like that's entry level at Facebook now because all of their options are underwater. So they've got to pay people to show up now. SBC is now running through the compensation line. Like that's a lot of money. If they're laying off people, not that Facebook has, but like the tech complex lays off like 5,000 people at a throw, 10,000 people at a throw, and they're all high paid jobs. Like that's a lot of consumption that disappears out of the economy.
Yeah, I mean we are going into a recession.
I think, like you said last week, that we'll see the mark in 18 months. Then we'll see the mark start 6 months ago.
Yeah.
The funny thing is, I just think the question is how sniffing it out.
I just think the question is how deep it is, and what happens after.
How deep is your love? You'd have to say that if you look at the size of the party that we were just in, that the hangover is going to be pretty big too, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe, or maybe, I mean, maybe, you know, policymakers actually thread a needle that's not so, look, if you had told me we were going to shut
down
the country,
for everything.
Yeah,
I would argue it's the second. We made it through 2020 pretty fucking well. We stopped an entire country and made it through. Like, that's, I'm going to give them a thumbs up on what they did. Whether or not there were negative consequences, fine. But, you know, so now you got to figure out the other side of it. I'd rather have this problem than austerity back then and a huge deflationary crash.
Yeah, it's an interesting question to ask. Is the, you could give them some thumbs up for 2020, but then would you need as much of their intervention had they not done so much stuff the 10 years before that?
I mean, I don't know. Why don't we just remove them all and then we never have to worry about it? But that's not the world.
No,
that's not the world we live in.
That's the world we have lived in.
Yeah, but we had depressions like every 10 years back then. Like, it wasn't some panacea back then. Things have gotten generally better, I think, since policymakers got involved.
I'm going to guess that they were more localized and less widespread and less systematic or systemic.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely issues with it. Don't get me wrong, but I think that we have, I don't think that as a group of commentators or market participants, we have accurately forecast any trend since 2020, and I don't expect this one to be any different. I think
it will not shock
me. Yeah, it will not shock me if 2023 is the year of deflation.
What does it mean to be, what do you mean, like, what's your definition of deflation?
I think you could see, I mean, look, if you're stopping, I mean, and I know we're not like actually stopping economic activity, but we are definitely throwing the brakes on. If, say, like, these gas inventories start to actually, like, let's say demand destruction happens and the inventories actually get somewhat back to normalized levels, like the stuff that I'm talking to my buddy about, then you have like this, I don't know, potentially more of a market balance. And what if we slow down some consumption generally, and maybe everything's not running as tight as humanly possible, and all the retailers are going to start discounting because they overbought the same thing at once. And maybe that supply chain's not as tight, and maybe shipping rates come down, and maybe rail rates come down. Like, maybe prices are lower.
Yeah.
I like that. I think there's a natural overshoot high and low of these type of equilibrium seeking systems. So wouldn't surprise me for us to have gluts of things in a year or two.
We got them now. Need to buy anything for your house, buy it now.
Lumber. Have we talked about lumber?
Yeah. What's
lumber is actually, really, yeah.
I mean, it's down from insanity, but it's not.
Yeah, 200.
No, Jake, it is crashed. It is a flawed idea. It's still crashed.
It's still like 100% higher than it was.
No. Do not look at facts. It is crashed. People predicted the crash.
Okay.
Yeah, it's way higher than it
should
was.
Should I fix my fence or not? That's what I want to know.
Yeah, I think you probably should.
Do it now?
Yeah, I think you probably should.
Okay.
Dustin Jalbert, he's on the Twitter machine. He said $300 lumber for a little while. So it's possible that it goes a lot lower. But I don't think it's.
I'm waiting
there
for negative prices. That's when I like to.
That's going to be tough.
I just wanted a clarification on deflation before, because when people say inflation, what they mean is the stuff that I buy is getting more expensive, and when they say deflation, what they mean is the stuff that I own is getting cheaper. The assets are going down. CPI type deflation. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's what's disinflation rather than deflation?
I think it's rate of change slowing. Yeah.
Is it?
Yeah. Yeah.
So are we looking for some disinflation through here? What was the last print? Are we still at like a super gnarly 8.5%?
Yeah, I think so.
Year on year. Yeah. Housing's 20% year on year.
Yeah, housing had to slow down. Like, I'm totally okay with that decision to pump the brakes a little bit on that. But it's going to have consequences.
Kind of destructive for your society to have such expensive housing costs.
Yeah, you don't want that.
You don't want the Fed going from the accelerator all the way to the floor to the brake, back on the accelerator?
Well, I definitely don't think the Fed should have still been buying mortgage-backed securities in a just absolute white-hot housing market. That one had me scratching my head.
Like, I agree with that.
Really? Okay. You know best, Father.
Yeah, that's why you don't have the PhD, man. You can't read the magic book. We made it.
Woof.
It's the hour. Thanks, folks.